I'd been thinking and thinking on this story for so long, I probably gave it a good 12 to 18 months where it was just thought space. It was a note in my phone that I kept adding to occasionally. I got my notebook out and I went, okay, these are my characters. I already had the setting, which helped. And these are the main scenes that I want to hit on my way. And then I launched in.
Welcome to Writes for Women, a podcast all about celebrating women's voices and supporting women writers. I'm Pamela Cook, women's fiction author, writing teacher, mentor, and podcaster. Before beginning today's chat, I would like to acknowledge and pay my respects to the Dharawal people, the traditional custodians of the land on which this podcast is being recorded, along with the traditional owners of the land throughout Australia, and pay my respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging. And a quick reminder that there could be strong language and adult concepts discussed in this podcast, so please be aware of this if you have children around. Let's relax on the convo couch and chat to this week's guest.
Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of Writes for Women. My guest today on the podcast is Renee Black. Renee is the author of Red Dirt Home, this lovely looking book that I have right here if you're looking on video. It's her second book, but her first in print with HQ, HarperCollins, a rural fiction story which centres around a woman who experiences sexual assault and then has to cope with the fallout of that. But it is a romance, so there is a HEA, and we're going to talk to Renee all about that today. But first, let me tell you a little about Renee. Renee Black's family stretches back at least three generations of farmers on both her mum and dad's side. She spent her formative years growing up on a property north of Wagga, New South Wales, that bred cattle and hosted the odd ostrich sale. Renee currently lives in Queensland in the Moreton Bay region and shares a home with her husband, two little bookworms, and an assortment of animals. By day, Renee is a qualified social worker and has spent the last decade working in the child protection industry. By night, she escapes into the romantic rural fiction stories that she writes. In 2023, Renee won the RWA Sapphire Award for Best Unpublished Manuscript by a published author, and On the Down Low was published by Escape in digital format, and now Red Dirt Home has been published by HQ HarperCollins and has just been out for the last couple of weeks. It's a heartfelt, deeply emotional story about finding home, facing the past and falling in love, and was published just a couple of weeks ago as I record this on Thursday, the 21st of March. It's fantastic to have Renee on the podcast. She's a longtime supporter of Writes for Women, both as a listener and as a Patreon supporter. So it's really fantastic to have her join me on the Writes for Women Convo Couch. Renee Black, welcome to the Writes for Women Convo Couch. It's so good to have you here. And I have to say a massive thank you to you. You've been a longtime supporter of the podcast. You're a Patreon supporter, which I so appreciate. I'm very grateful. And it's just lovely to have you here and to be able to talk about your, it's not your first book, it's your second book, but your first full print book. So welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I have been listening and learning from your podcast for years now. So it's truly amazing to be on it.
It's really good to have you here. And I love it when there's that full circle moment too, from listener to guest. So it's amazing. And congratulations on having Red Dirt Home out. It's been out for how long has it been out for now?
A bit over 2 weeks, I think. Oh, a day over 2 weeks now. Felt a blink of an eye that it's been on shelves and at the same time, like it's been out forever. So it's, a truly fantastic feeling.
There's always such a big lead time, isn't there? Like that lead up to publication. And then I'm going to talk to you about that and how it's been with the actual publication. I know you've been up in Queensland doing some events with our mutual friend, Penelope Janu, one of them. So that was lovely.
She's been so lovely helping me out with my first like library talks and author talks. And it's just, she's just a beautiful example of how welcoming and supportive the writing community is in Australia. Especially romance writers, I think.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. And we'll get on to talking about that. So before we do get on to talking about Red Dirt Home, Renee, can you tell us, when did you first know that you wanted to be a writer? And how did that kind of develop to the point where you had a manuscript ready for publication or to be sent off for publication?
So I've always been a reader. As a kid, I was always that kid who got in trouble and sprung for reading under the doona when I should have been sleeping
right.
with a torch and that warning of you're going to wreck your eyes. So that was me growing up. And while there is in some box somewhere in my parents' house, there's a series of short stories about a horse named Starlight.
Oh, really?
Right. Yeah. Somewhere in the abyss. Yeah, writing wasn't, it wasn't really, being an author and being published, it wasn't really on my radar as something that was doable. I was too busy dreaming about being a rock star, but yeah.
Oh, I love that you had options. I love the options.
Yeah, writing a book, no way, but singing on stage, maybe. Yeah, so reading stayed with me as I got older and I went to uni and became a social worker and then started having kids and all of that kind of stuff. But writing itself came later in life when I was just had my second child. My first child, she was a handful as a newborn. She had silent reflux and she had lactose intolerance. And it took about 6 to 8 weeks to sort out what it was and get it treated, which was a really hard as a first time mum stepping into that motherhood with those medical issues. It was really exhausting.
Yeah, it's that thing of what's wrong. There's something wrong, but I don't know what it is.
Can't tell you what's wrong.
Yeah, I know.
So that was really hard. So when I had my second child come along, I was so uptight and nervous about it once he was born that I ended up with postnatal anxiety. So it was a really hard time. And I remember feeling very claustrophobic sitting in the house. So often I would go out the back, I'd have the baby up on my chest and a book in my hands and I'd read outside. And I was reading, I was so excited to have found a sequel to a book that I adored, absolutely loved. I probably read it 5 times and I won't say what book it was because the sequel left me feeling really angry, uncontrollably angry. Yeah, the author had just taken this hero that I had loved and adored and fallen for and just turned him into a real cheating, horrible person in the sequel. And I was so angry. And when you're already feeling out of control with your emotions, having that on top, it was crazy. So I said to myself, I'm going to write a book. I'm going to write my own book. I'm going to put one of these stories that are floating around in my head on paper, even if it takes me my whole maternity leave, I'm going to do it. And I sat down and I wrote that story out. And then I found that it was just so therapeutic and it gave me some of that control back. And so I wrote another and I wrote another. And by the time I went back to the office, I had 5 really badly written manuscripts in my drawer.
You had 5 manuscripts. That's the bonus. Yeah.
Yeah, I had 5 manuscripts. And then it was later on that I joined the Romance Writers of Australia that I actually found out what to do with those manuscripts and how to refine them. And it took a lot of rewriting to get something that was something I was proud of and that I could then submit to publishers and start that process.
Which was the book that you decided to submit to a publisher and how did that kind of come about for you?
There was a few that I had submitted, but I didn't get a lot of, I was doing it a lot online to begin with and probably just heading straight to the bottom of the slush pile with them. And it wasn't until I started pitching through RWA first and then the ASA as well, the Australian Society of Authors, that I've started getting requests for the first 3 chapters or 50,000 words, not 50,000 words, 50 pages, those sorts of things. And so, yeah, I had a few bites on a couple of manuscripts that are still in the bottom drawer. And then on the down low was picked up by Escape in, when was that? It was about middle of 2022 because it came out in February 2023 as an ebook.
Okay. So for those that don't know about Escape, it is a digital publishing arm of HQ, HarperCollins. And yeah, I have noticed over the years that it's not uncommon for books that are published through that or authors who are published through that to at some point down the track, maybe with another book or another few books down the track to end up being published in print. Which you have now been with Red Dirt Home.
Yeah, it was, I don't know, I feel on the down low with like my apprenticeship in publishing, not so much in writing because I have had quite a few manuscripts before that. It's definitely an apprenticeship into the publishing world and a really warm welcome because being able to compare an ebook only to a print, it was kind of gentler I think is the best way to say it. It was welcome. It wasn't as intense with the, you do some structural edits with your publisher and then you do around a couple of round of copy edits just with the one editor and then that's it. And you get a little bit, Escape are really good around saying, what did you envision the cover to be like? So it was a really nice journey into this whole industry that I really thought I knew about, but knew absolutely nothing about.
Yeah. There's a lot to learn, isn't there?
Definitely.
What do you think that you did learn in those early days through when that first book was out? What were the things that kind of were revelations to you or the learning curve that you were on at that point?
Yeah, so many learning curves. A lot about the editing process itself, because I think as an aspiring writer that there is an editing process and you probably, I had my own, I'll do it this way, I'll print it out, I'll do a handwritten edit and then I'll put it back on the computer, and beta readers are really popular and that kind of thing. But it's, you know, how to read the comments from your editor, how to then respond to those comments, what changes you do make on the manuscript and what you just say, yes, I agree or no, I don't agree with, and then the next round and things that get missed in that first round that do get picked up in the second round, and how those pesky little errors still slip through even right at the end. So yeah, it was a lot of steps and I was surprised at how quickly it could happen once it did happen. Yeah, there's a big lead up, I think, to like, this is so for like Red Dirt Home, I think editing started around October and I was like, but it's going to be on shelves in March. And it felt like October took forever to come. And then once it came, it was boom, let's get into it and let's get going and let's make this book the best it can be.
You must have learned a lot in editing that first book. Had you already written Red Dirt Home at that point and were going back to refine it, or was that a new story that came to you after that first publication?
Yeah, it was a new book that came to me after it. I had the story idea for Paige. So the whole story came from one line that was in On the Down Low. And it was a line where Ryan, the main character, who is Paige's best friend from Red Dirt Home, he's describing her at, they're at the Birdsville races and he sees her through the crowd dancing with a city slicker that he calls a stiff shirt man. And Ryan makes this comment about, it's always Paige's choice who she goes home with at the end of any event. She's in charge. And I thought, what if she wasn't in charge?
Oh,
and and I just let that idea fester.
Simmer,
that sounds so much better than fester, doesn't it?
Sometimes they do fester, let's be honest. Sometimes it is a festering process.
I think it might have been more a fester than a simmer, because I was like, no, On the Download is going to be a standalone. There's not going to be any follow-ons. But the idea really did fester in my mind. And yeah, it was NaNoWriMo in 2022, when it was just about to come out. I sat down and went, I'm going to write Paige's and Jackson's story now. Yep.
Okay. Oh, interesting. Yeah, I didn't realize, because I haven't read your first one, so I didn't realize that this story came out of that. That's really interesting. You come from a rural background, Renee. Were you reading in this genre and then that's what drew you to writing in it? Like, how closely connected is your kind of personal background, do you think, to the stories you write?
Yeah, I think it has a huge influence. We've got family farmers on both sides of my family, even though we're not currently, you know, my brother's back on the land,
right,
living on property down Wagga where I grew up. But I remember Fiona Palmer's The Long Road Home was my first rural romance that I just picked up out of a box at a garage sale, and I read it and it was like I just found something that I could relate to. The setting was familiar, the events in the book were quite familiar for me, and the character's journey and how they found love, I just loved it. And from that point, I just jumped into whatever rural romance book I could find.
Yeah.
I was definitely a huge fan of the genre reading it as a reader before I started writing in it.
And your career also as a social worker, Renee, that I know it's definitely impacted this story because of the issues that it's dealing with. We're going to talk about that in a minute. But how much do you think that side of your life has influenced your writing?
In a huge way. I think being a social worker, it's opened me up to meeting incredible people, people who, you know, you don't see a social worker because everything's going okay for you. You see a social worker when something's gone wrong or something's cropped up and you need help, you need support. So I've met a lot of inspiring people and a lot of people who have been through some really unique situations. And so it's not, I don't ever just focus on one person and say this is their story in my writing. It's just an accumulation of the people I meet and the scenarios and situations I get to support them through.
Do you find yourself coming home and scribbling down notes, or is it all stored just up in your subconscious, do you think?
I think, yeah, it's definitely stored in my subconscious, because I think, especially with writing Red Dirt Home, it was just bits and pieces. I was like, how would Paige react? And I was able to go back in my mind and think about the people who had been in a similar situation and go, that's a realistic thing. That is how she could react, knowing her personality. So yeah, it was like this bank of memories that I could pull from to really make Paige three-dimensional.
And she definitely is. She's a great character. So let's get into talking about Red Dirt Home. Before we get into talking about Paige and what actually happens in the book, can you tell listeners what the book's about?
Absolutely. Red Dirt Home is set in outback Queensland on a fictional cattle station somewhere between Birdsville and Mount Isa. And it's centered on Paige, who she's living her absolute best life as a station hand out on Whitetail Ridge. She's loving it. She gets to ride horses and check on cattle, and she loves her chickens, and she's kicking up red dust all over the place until it all comes crashing down when someone she knows and trusts assaults her, and that leaves her unemployed. It leaves her homeless, and it really leaves her broken. And then she winds up on Kurilga Station, where Jackson, who is the cattle station's owner's son, is really trying to step up and leave behind his country larrikin ways and run the property after his dad's accident. So they've both got some very big journeys ahead of them.
Yeah, definitely. I love that they're both characters with issues of their own, and then bringing them together creates that bit of an explosion at times. Let's start with Paige. It's a dual point of view narrative. So we hear from both Paige and Jackson, but I think it would be fair to say that Paige is the kind of main protagonist. Would you agree?
Definitely. Yeah, definitely.
So as you mentioned, she started life in your first book, On the Down Low. How has she developed as a character for you? And maybe then we can get into talking about what actually happens in this book and how that impacts her life.
Yeah, so she is this vibrant, like big personality in On the Down Low. Ryan is a bit withheld, I guess you could say. He's quieter, and Paige is almost his opposite, where she's very quite dynamic and big spirited person, loves a party, loves getting out there and having fun, but is such a hard worker at the same time. So she really embraces that country girl life. And then what we see happen to her in Red Dirt Home is that event that really crushes her spirit, and she just becomes a shadow of the person that she once was. And she has to really find out who she can trust and how to be who she was again.
It's a great kind of vehicle, really, isn't it, for when we put our characters under pressure, and this is a huge amount of pressure and trauma that she experiences. It's really interesting to see how they react, isn't it, to and what their personalities allow them to accept and not accept and things like that. So let's talk about, we're not going to go into details about the assault. And I have to say, Renee, you handle this so well, I felt, in the book. It's so sensitively done. You don't shy away from putting it on the page, but you just give the readers enough details that we know exactly what's happened, and we get a really strong sense of the seriousness of the situation and the predicament that she's in. And you have that trigger warning at the beginning. Kudos to you for that. I thought you handled it so well. But what kind of decisions did you have to make in when you thought, okay, this is the thing that's going to happen to her, and it's the inciting incident really of the story and sets her off on this path that she then has to deal with everything that happens as a result of it? So when you knew that you were going to have her be assaulted early on in the story, what kind of decisions did you have to make in terms of how you were going to present that to the reader?
Yeah, there was a lot of decisions. And the first one was, how am I going to put this on the page in a way that's respectful to people who have been through a similar situation, but also gives them some sense of, yes, I wouldn't want a survivor of sexual assault to read the book and go, oh, that's just so unrealistic. So I wanted to really capture the feelings and the emotions that Paige would be experiencing in the lead up to that event in a way that was realistic for people that some people might be able to relate to, or anyone reading that. I'm sure people have mothers and sisters and daughters and friends who are women that could really see where Paige was coming from and what she was going through and why she was responding the way she was. So that was really important to me. But I also didn't want to traumatize anyone from reading it. So I was very careful around making sure that the act itself is not on the page, because it doesn't need to be. You get the picture around what's happening. And then to pick up after, we see that fallout almost immediately after he's left and everything, and Paige is left reeling around what's happened. So that was really important to me. I also, and that's drawing on my social work experience, is that the biggest lesson I've learned is there's not one way to experience an assault. There's not one way to respond to an assault, and there's not one way to heal from an assault. So the only thing that is that the one common factor in all of that is that healing journey can start and victims can move to survivors when they have that network around them and they have people who believe them. And that's the big message I wanted to convey through Paige's story, not just what she had been through, but how people around her strengthened her by believing her. I thought that I wanted that to really be my key message. And I knew that the other big choice was like, that's a really dark storyline. That's a rural romance, and that's a serious topic. And I think we should be putting serious topics in romance books, but it has to be balanced. There has to be dark and there has to be light. And using the setting of Kurilba Station and the different community members of different ages. So we've got Cookie, who's the old grumpy chef, and we've got Jackson's younger siblings and the other kids on the station. They really helped to provide the light.
Yeah. It
wasn't just all this really hard-hitting plot around such significant trauma.
I agree with you. I'm all for going into the dark realms. Have been known to do so myself in my rural fiction. Yeah, so we have Paige. We don't want to give away spoilers, so we're not going to go too far into what happens as a result. But as you mentioned, she finds herself homeless pretty much immediately after this event. And she is supported by people, her friends on Kurilga Station, which is also where Jackson is. Jackson being the other point of view character. So tell us about Jackson and how he developed for you.
Yeah, so Jackson's also in on the down low. And you get a real sense of him being that country larrikin who's only really interested in a quick fling and that beer at the end of the day. That's the highlight for him. So he's a real boy's boy. He loves his toys. He's got a Harley Davidson. He's got the car with the big antennas and all of the show stickers on the back. But when we first pick up with Jackson in Red Dirt Home, he's living in the city and he's part of a band. There's been a big fight between him and his dad that's put him in the city. But when his dad has that accident, he's really forced to be in a position where he has to consider more than just how fun life can be. He's got to pick up a lot of responsibilities that he's previously avoided. And it was really fun to play with that, a character who is just fun-loving, and put him in a position where he has to be serious and he has to take responsibility and think of other people as well as the bigger picture of the cattle station. And then offset him against Paige, who makes it no secret that she doesn't like Jackson at the beginning of the book. She really despises him.
Yeah.
But he shows another side of him. And when I wrote him, I gave him the name Jackson deliberately, because for me it was that real, doesn't take anything serious, troublemaker kind of name. And I didn't like him that much in On the Down Low. I thought he was a side character who had a place, but I didn't like him very much. But when I wrote Red Dirt Home, I needed a character who could really match Paige's intensity and Paige's big persona.
Yep.
So bringing out that more caring and responsible side of Jackson opens him up. And now he's probably my favorite hero that I've ever written.
Oh, yeah. Fabulous. And I love that too. And I think that's so important, isn't it? We're multifaceted. And often when we're writing characters, if they're not the main character, you don't get to go into all the ins and outs of them and see those other dimensions of a character so much. But when you put them under the spotlight and then you think, okay, now I've got to really round this character out and I've got to see who else he is other than this original kind of more static person perhaps than I originally thought he was.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a lot of the feedback from the readers who have already read the book and have read On the Down Low. A couple of them have messaged me and said, I really didn't like Jackson. I didn't know how you were going to redeem him and make me like him in Red Dirt Home, but you did do it. So I'm like, yes, I've arrived that we saw that other side of him. We see him interact with his siblings and try and fill the shoes that his dad's left. And yeah, it's a bit of a ride for him and a really big personal journey for him.
Yeah, and it's great when you've got that. And they both characters do have that in this book, this really strong character arc where we see who they are at the beginning and they've got potential to do these things. Paige is probably a little bit more rounded at the beginning than Jackson, but then because of the situation they're in, each of them separately and then together, we see this massive kind of character arc for them, which is exactly what you want, isn't it, when you are writing and reading a story?
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It was definitely one of the aspects that I don't think you can plan for too much. I think it's one of those things that just came through as I was writing the book. And the story, even in that first draft, was just the huge changes in both characters.
You've just led beautifully into my next question, Renee. I wanted to ask you, you already had a little bit of the bones of this story from On the Down Low. You had the setting and you had some of the characters, but are you someone then who sits down and does like character bios and plans things out, or do you just like launch into the story and see where it takes you?
A little bit of both, because I'd been thinking on this story for so long. I probably gave it a good 12 to 18 months where it was just thought space. It was a note in my phone that I kept adding to occasionally. I got my notebook out and I went, okay, these are my characters. I already had the setting, which helped. And these are the main scenes that I want to hit on my way. And then I launched in. So I had a little bit. I write at nighttime. I work full time. I've got my two kids, a household to run. My days are full. My days are very full and I am not a morning person. I take my hat off to anyone who can wake up before their alarm.
Yeah, I know I used to be a morning person, but the older I get, the more. I'm not a night person either. I'm a middle of the day person.
No, I'm still a bit of a night owl. So, you know, my household's fairly quiet by about 8:30. So, you know, that gives me sometimes three, if I'm feeling energized, hours to write. And I really treasure that time. I'll start off, I'll write a scene or a chapter during that time. And then I'll spend some time just doing dot points around where I think the story is headed, like in the next scene or the next chapter. So then when I come to it the next night, I don't sit there and go, what am I going to write? I can jump straight in. And I tend to try and switch things up too. So if I'm feeling a bit stale on the computer, I'll whip out my pen and my notebook and I'll just start handwriting a scene. But this story in particular, I think because it had so much brain space, time, it did just flow quite easily, which was a
blessing. Yeah, absolute blessing. Do you revise as you go? Are you writing a scene and then revising it before you start the next one, or you just go from the beginning and go right to the end?
I just go right straight through to the end. I do keep a page specifically aside in my Red Dirt Home notebook for any edits. So if I think, oh, I probably should have put that in, I'll just write it down. So then I know next, I'll probably print it out next. And I know that's probably one of the first things that I'll put in because it's on my list of things I want to fix up or add in or take out.
And do you use any beta readers before you send it to your publisher?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've got 4 to 5 really good writing friends, some who are seeking trad publish journey, some who are fantastic indie authors. And yeah, they all look for different things for me. So there's a couple who I know I tend to waffle when I write a lot of words and they're really good about going through and go, Renee, we don't need to know that he reached for the door handle and pulled it open and then stepped out of the car after he unbuckled his seatbelt. Just get him out of the car. So they're really good at picking up on some of those things for me. Other readers are really good about the bigger picture stuff and go, why is he doing this on page 96 when on page 30 you had him doing this? Yeah, they've got different strengths. And so I really love them and appreciate their help. And then I've always got those ones that I can go to. There was one friend that I have, I went, oh, this first chapter needs work. Can you read it? These are the things I'm looking for. And she jumped in and said, yes, can I read the rest now? And I said, no, in case I need you for something else.
It's invaluable, isn't it, to have those that feedback. And like you say, having people with different strengths too in terms of what they can pick up and what they can advise you on, I think is really such a benefit, isn't it?
Definitely. Mm. Definitely. Yeah. Just having those mix, and the group of beta readers that I rely on, my writing friends, they don't all write rural romance. One writes paranormal, one writes a historical, and a couple will write rural romance. So yeah. It's so good to have just that different background, and writing is writing, and they can pick up on different things because of their own experiences in their genres.
I agree. My writing group's exactly the same. We all write everything. There's a couple of romance writers, a few general fiction, historical. We've got a bit of everything and it works beautifully. You don't have to be in the same genre as your fellow writers or your writing buddies. We touched on this before and you mentioned some of the kind of support cast in the story. How important do you think, definitely in rural fiction or rural romance, but also in this particular story for Paige, how important do you think that having that community in the background there is in her journey and for her kind of healing journey, I guess, in this story?
Oh, it was huge for Paige. It was the Kurilga community. She knows most of them because she knows she's best friend with Ryan, who's already on the property. And she's visited a few times because even though Whitetail Ridge and Kurilga are neighbours, it still takes a few hours to get between them. So it was really interesting to play with the community dynamics around that secret keeping, because she does truly try and hide and forget about what she's been through. And she's trying to do that to people who know. Mm. So that was a really interesting dynamic to play with. But then also to have the strength of the community behind her, regardless of anything she did or said or behaved or act, anything like that, it really showed that strength around community love and how your family isn't always people that you're related to. So yeah, it was huge for her, and it was huge for Jackson as well, because he was rising to a leadership position around these people, and he'd never been seen as a leader before he had to step up and become one. And it was really interesting to see how people responded to that, who supported him, maybe who gave him a bit of a hard time around it. It was, yeah, fun dynamics to play with.
Yeah. And like you say, that allowed you to have some of that light that to complement the shade that you have. This is something, Renee, I did mean to ask you earlier, but on that whole issue of the assault and how Paige copes with it and how it actually occurs, the fact that it is someone that she knows, in recent years in particular, probably even the last 5 years in romance writing, and I think this came out of the whole Me Too movement, the issue of consent has become a real kind of focus in some ways in romance writing, in terms of making sure that that whole idea of consent is at least somewhat addressed in the romance itself. So obviously there is no consent in this particular instance for Paige. Has that kind of discussion that's happened around consent in romance writing in the last few years, did that also inform your decision to have the kind of pivotal incident at the beginning be an assault?
Yes and no. The issue around consent and how it's been grabbed hold of in the romance industry is something that I was very aware of, and I very much wanted to show the difference between consent and non-consensual sex. And I think it was really important for me to show the difference and have that contrast in it. Mm-hmm. I love that these are issues that are coming up in romance books, and I love that writers are jumping on board and saying, yes, we really do need to show consent and safe sex practices and things like that. I think these are things that, you know, our young people coming up are really struggling with it and need to learn. I think it was Rachel Johns who said we should make every young teenage boy sit down and read a romance. Yes. And learn about sex and consent and safe sex from romance books, because I think everyone that I've read so far, they've got it right.
I agree. I think it's been fabulous kind of focus in the last few years, and I fully support that. I think just there's so many great things being done in romance writing, and I think it's really helped to cut away that stereotype that a lot of people have about romance writing and the kind of airy fairy happily ever after. And of course there are happy ever afters in romance, that's why we read them, but there's a lot of things that happen before we get to that. And I think that the way that romance is being handled now and talked about and the openness with which issues of consent and sex and all that sort of thing is being discussed in romance circles and written about is really helped promote the genre to a wider audience.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think romance is the best-selling genre there is out there. So let's embrace that. Mm. But also I think it's that promise of the happily ever after that makes readers feel safe to explore these tough issues, to explore topics that they normally wouldn't just go and pick up a book about and read. They've got that promise of the happily ever after at the end. So they're happy to go down the darker roads or explore the serious issues because they know at the end it'll all work out.
Yeah. So we're not going to talk about the end. We're not going to talk about spoilers. You'll have to read it to find out. But the setting of the book is in outback Queensland on these massive properties that just go for kilometres and kilometres. You grew up in Wagga yourself. You live in Moreton Bay in Queensland. Have you been out that way yourself and have you, or did you go and do any research? How did you draw on that for your story?
Oh, I feel like such a fraud when I get asked this question because when I wrote on the download, it was COVID and we weren't allowed to travel more than 5 kilometres from home. So Google Maps and I became best friends. But I was lucky that, like, I've been in the outback before. So I've been out to Alice Springs and Uluru and I drove. I saw a lot of that red dirt, you know, and that kind of thing. And so I could relate to that. I've been in the humidity and I've been in that really dry heat and the freezing cold of the desert where you don't be so cold. So I was able to pull up on the experiences that I've had in different areas. But that was one of the things that I was like, oh, I'm going to have to really plan this road trip out to Burksville because I want to go to the races. It sounds like so much fun. But I think that's the beautiful thing about technology now is that we can go on Google Maps and feel like we've walked into the Burksville pub and seen the wall full of Akubras and write about it. I think writers have a really good theory of mind where they can put themselves in the shoes of people and try and think how they would be feeling and go through all those 5 senses. What are they smelling? What are they hearing? What are they seeing? Yeah. Sorry. What are they touching? Yeah. I think, thank God for Google Maps.
Yes, definitely. And videos and things like that, YouTube, you can find so much online and don't feel like a fraud because you are certainly not the only author that's setting books in places you haven't been. And you have been there. It's just not this particular story. But the setting, you do a beautiful job of describing the setting. You talked about just then using the 5 senses. Is that a part of the writing that you enjoy?
It really is. I did, way back before I was published, I did a few coaching sessions with Lauren Clark from Creating Inc. And she's wonderful. But she said to me, what do you want? What do you want your readers to experience when they read your book? And I said, I want them to be immersed. I want them to be immersed in the world so that they literally have to pull themselves out of the book. And she was great in going, you need the 5 senses. So that's something when I edit, I make sure that I go, okay, are they getting the full experience? And it's also something that I use if I get stuck, I don't know how to open a scene or open a chapter. I'll go, okay, where are they? What are they hearing? Or what are they smelling? Or what are they seeing? And start that way.
Yeah, that's great. I think that's a great tip for anyone out there. And when you do get stuck, that's a really good thing. And also that when you're going back and revising, you can just do a full revision just on that sensory writing. But you do it beautifully. I did feel like I was there. I could picture it and hear it and see it. So you did that beautifully.
Oh, thank you.
We have covered about plotting and pantsing. You're somewhere in between. And we did touch on this earlier. But how have you found the kind of promotion and publicity side of, particularly with this book, I think, when you've got the print book out there? It's out on audio too, I believe.
Yes, yep, it's out of audio with Belinda Audio.
So the whole package. How are you
finding the whole deal?
So exciting. How are you finding the whole kind of business and promotion side of things?
Oh, there's been a lot to learn. There's been a lot to learn, but I'm so grateful that I haven't had to learn it by myself. I've had a beautiful brand manager from Parlequin who has been there every single step of the way, and there's been no question that's too silly for her to answer for me. And like I was saying before, having Penelope Janu with me to start those library talks was just a big relief. It surprised me. I thought that I would struggle through a library talk because I am not an expert on the publishing industry. I'm not an expert on writing books, but people really come along to those and they just want to know they just want to know about you, and they want to know about how you wrote this book and your experience of that book and how it came on the page. And so sharing that has become a lot easier than I initially thought it was going to be. So it's amazing how many people can get behind you from writing a book and seeing it on the shelves and the shelfies. And yeah, social media is something I'm still working out, when to post and what to post, but I'm getting there. It's all trial and error, and no one holds anything against you. So that's a bonus too.
Yeah, I agree. And it's continually trial and error, believe me. And as you mentioned, I can't remember if we were talking about this on air or off, but the Australian writing community is such a supportive one, and particularly in that romance space, isn't it? There's always somebody that you can ask if you're not sure of anything.
Oh, absolutely. And I've been so lucky to have authors like Victoria Perman and May Linnell reach out and just guide me through being that person to say, this is a safe space. Come and ask me anything. It's fine. And I've been really lucky to have people like that. And I know that one day down the track, I'll be able to repay that to aspiring writers, debut authors. It's such a fantastic place to be, the Australian writing community. It's fantastic. You don't have to have met someone in person to get the support from them. Social media, Instagram is such a good place to be for that support, and everyone is so willing to give it.
I agree. It's fabulous. Too good sometimes. It's hard to get off Instagram. So what's happening for you next in terms of the next book, Renee? Already been written, or where are you with that?
Yep. I have another ebook coming out with Escape in August this year, 1st of August. It's called Breaking Free. And that's not set in outback Queensland. It's set in Queensland, but closer to the coast, around that Gympie area. And it really looks at the main characters are Georgia and Trent, and actually explores Georgia's experience of domestic violence. So another hairy topic, but with a happy ending, I promise.
Okay, excellent. Like, you've got, this is your brand and this is what you know. And I think it's great that you, and also that your publisher's supporting you going down that track. Because I do think in the earlier days of rural romance in particular, there was a bit of pressure to steer away from the darker issues. But there's definitely authors out there like Leonie Kelsall. She writes about a lot of kind of darker topics. But as you say, then you've got other lovely light things and beautiful settings to balance that out. And it's real life, isn't it? We read about these stories that are set in cities. Of course, these things happen in rural areas as well.
Absolutely. And I think the one of the challenges of exploring these issues in rural and remote communities is that they don't have the same access to health services, to counselling, to in-home support. It's a lot more limited, and they have to be a lot more creative. But at the same time, there's this beautiful sense of community and community support that you might not necessarily get in the suburbs and the cities. So it's a whole different kind of environment to play with.
Yeah, I love that. Renee, as a listener of the podcast, you would know that there's a question I generally ask at the end, and then I'm going to hit you with that now. What would you say is at the heart of your writing?
The heart of my writing is, I really feel it's to share those social issues and the impacts in a way that promises a happily ever after.
I love it. Yeah, that's great. And that's really good, because it's going to be a guiding light for you as you continue down the publication path. So really happy for you.
Oh, thank you so much. I knew you were going to hit me with that question.
I probably thought about that already. Have you got much more happening on the promotion front?
Yes, I've got 3 more library events coming up here in Queensland. And then in August, I will be down in Adelaide for the Romance Writers of Australia Conference. And there's a book signing on, I believe it's Friday afternoon, and I will be there with some amazing authors that I'll be getting to sign my books.
Ah, oh, fantastic. I will see you at the Romance Writers of Australia Conference. So it'll be lovely to catch up, and I wish you all the best with Red Dirt Home in the meantime. And thanks again for being such a great supporter of the podcast.
Oh, no, thank you so much for having me. It's been a blast.
Thanks for listening to Rights for Women. I hope you've enjoyed my chat with this week's guest. If you did, I'd love it if you could add a quick rating or review wherever you get your podcasts, so others can more easily find the episodes. Don't forget to check out the backlist on the Rights for Women website. So much great writing advice in the library there. And you can also find the transcript of today's chat on the website too. You can find details on the website on how to support the podcast through Patreon, and you can connect with me through the website at rightsforwomen.com, on Instagram and Twitter at W4WPodcast, the Facebook page Rights for Women, or find me and my writing at pamelacook.com.au. Thanks for listening. Have a great week. And remember, every word you write, you're one word closer to typing the end.